Hi.
Hi, Tara here.
Ah, Tara, sorry. You're not on the chat yet? Could you also join the chat?
No, not yet.
Okay, so I suggest that we take Maria's annotated document and work on that, because it contains the document that I have sent around. And so we see both the document and the annotation.
And I recall there was some comment by somebody else in an email.
Oh, I didn't get that.
It was Tara had sent an email 2 days ago to the mailing list, I think, about the terminal or what it's called. It's called now glossary. You know, the definitions of terms we wanted today.
Ah, I see. I have it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Then let's start. So welcome to the onto IOP teleconference. And yeah, the main issue will be the discussion of the document section 4. Last time we have discussed section 2. So in the meantime, I have made some corrections there. And if you have any comments there, we could also discuss this.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. I'm aware of my homework. I've started it, and I think I will get a bit of it done during the call, like explaining these conformance criteria. Sorry, I didn't have more time.
Good. Okay. So then let's... So, just a brief report on section 2. So I have deleted this section 2.4 where we defined conformance of those serializations, and I've also deleted in section 2.1 these conformance points. There were four conformance points, and I have deleted one and shortened another one as discussed last time, so you can have a look there. But then let's concentrate on section 4. So we have to take into account both Tara's and Maria's comments. So the first comment seems to be by Maria about non-logical symbol or OMS symbol. Ah, no. Actually, Tara has the first one. OMS and OMS language. So the definitions of OMS and OMS language are slightly circular. Does any language with a formal declarative logic-based semantics qualify as an OMS? I would say yes. In principle, any such language would qualify.
So the subclause about the intention doesn't add anything to the definition.
Yeah. So mean the subclause about the intention. I don't see it here. What do you mean exactly?
That it's used. The circular part where it says in comments or in commas used to I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know exactly what it
means. It's set of expressions like non-logical symbols, sentences, and structuring elements in a given OMS language. And OMS language is language that is used for the formal specification of OMS. With
the
formal declarative logic-based semantics plus non-logical annotations. I don't actually mind this circularity. I mean, you everywhere have circularity in definitions. If you have natural language, it's not avoidable.
It just left me with the question of exactly what I asked. Are those conditions that are spelled out there sufficient for something to be considered an OMS language? And so if you leave out the part that says used for, then it becomes clear.
Okay, yeah, maybe we can, yeah, that's true. We can say just logical language that is used, no, language equipped with formal declarative logic-based semantics plus non-logical annotations. Do you mean that would suffice?
Yes.
Yeah, we can say note OMS languages are used for the formal specification of OMS. Then this would be degraded into a note, and then we would remove the circularity.
Perfect.
Okay. Then non-logical symbols. So Maria asks, we have two notions there, non-logical symbol and OMS symbol. And actually, it's true that they are both defined, and that's the ISO style for writing this down. I'm not sure whether OMG has a different style, but normally they say they keep the same style, so it should be fine.
So you mean they are equivalent, or basically...
Yeah.
Yeah, the same thing, but different terms for it. Okay. Because I wasn't sure if actually it was meant as, okay, you have non-logical symbols and you have OMS symbols. Yeah, but at least the notation wasn't clear to me.
Yeah,
okay, I meant the notation and I just didn't know. So.
Would we want to have a note, maybe, to make that explicit? You know, that these are, because, yeah, when you read it, you kind of look like, oh, they forgot to put in the definition of non-logical symbol.
Yeah.
Like having a note to say that these two terms are, you know, equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if you put a comma after the non-logical symbol.
That would be good. Yeah, maybe a comma should be sufficient.
Okay, yeah, because we have this situation several times.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure whether... would be useful to always have a note about that they are equivalent. So I put a comma there. Yeah. We have a macro synonym. So we should basically just, I put a comma in the macro and then it should be everywhere. Okay, then Tara also has a comment on logical symbol. This definition depends on a certain interpretation of atomic as opposed to its use in an atomic sentence. All uses of atom through the document appear to be consistent with this usage in the sense of indivisible. It's perhaps worth a footnote to clarify. What do you mean opposed to atomic sentence? Because atomic sentences are kind of constructed out of components, or?
Right, an atomic sentence is going to have multiple atomic symbols in it.
Okay, and then we should have a note that we say an atomic sentence is normally compound. Yeah?
Yeah. Or the use of atomic in commonly used term of atomic sentence is not the same sense as we use atomic in this document.
Yeah.
Because I searched and I didn't see any use of atomic sentence in the document. So you are self-consistent. It's just people coming in with preconceived notions of what atomic means. That is the only issue.
So we could say the notion of atomic sentence may already involve several non-logical symbols.
Yeah.
Okay, I've added this. Okay, then Maria has a comment on models. That's just IE and the M in the OMS.
Because you're talking about the ontology specification of model, but in the ONS model,
you mean
model than there, so it was just a clarification, or intended as that.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessary, but I thought good.
Yeah, it's nice to edit. Okay, Tara, the definition of signature does not account for partitioning of the non-logical symbols. Elsewhere I see signatures being defined as a structure consisting several sets. That's true, yeah.
Yeah, and we particularly get into trouble in common logic claiming we have a signature-free syntax, so that's quite... inconsistent with this usage.
Yeah. So we should basically replace this set of non-logical symbols by something that could be more structured. So we could say a signature is a set or otherwise structured entity of non-logical symbols of an OMS. The all is not.
Right. I mean, vocabulary is a term that's also used, and I think that would be including all the symbols, irregardless of the structure of the signature?
I would say vocabulary is a synonym to a signature, isn't it?
Not in all usages.
In
common logic, I don't know whether we're using these terms wrong, but in common logic we say we have a vocabulary, but we have no signature.
Well, I think some uses of signature refer to the non-logical symbols. Like signatures restricted to the non-logical symbols as opposed to the logical ones.
So is the vocabulary.
Yeah, but I would say all users, or the main users just of signature and vocabulary refer to the non-logical symbols.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So, in the common logic standard, the notion of vocabulary is used in the same sense of signature here. And common logic declares to be signature-free, but in the notion of structure or of interpretation, this is always relative to a certain vocabulary, and then I would say signature here. So, in a sense, common logic is not strictly signature-free. Only the abstract syntax is, and so I would say common logic also fits in this scheme here. We just could have a synonym for signature, namely vocabulary.
Yeah, I mean the point of saying signature free in common logic is that we don't have a structure where there are separate symbols for constants and functions and predicates. That's true in both the abstract and the concrete syntax.
Right, and that's referring to the identity between signature and non-logical lexicon, I guess.
Yeah, but even that is not true because you have two different kinds of entities, namely names and sequence markers.
And
propositional logic, for example, you also have just propositional symbols or propositional letters, and they also are collected into signatures. At least this is sometimes in literature called a signature. So, so then you would have kind of uniform signatures where there's no inner structure, and you would have more heterogeneous signatures, but I would call all them signatures.
Okay, so I guess in common logic we need to adjust our terminology, and instead of saying signature free, maybe we say we have a homogeneous signature, except for sequence markers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Sequence markers maybe not be regarded as part of the signatures because they are not. Are they interpreted in the models? They are.
Yeah,
they are. Yes.
Yeah. Then then even signatures are heterogeneous. Yeah, you have two different kinds of entities. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. Okay. So that's about signature. You also say the signature of L1, where L1 is an OMS language. And yeah, so the signature of a logic could also, that's basically the logical symbols, or what is that?
It's whether we consider the language as having an inherent set of non-logical symbols, or whether we look to the text. In Common Logic, this is actually changing from the original version to the revised version. The original one did talk about vocabulary of texts in the same way you are talking about signatures of expressions and so on, or sets of expressions. But in the revised version, it's the language as a whole that has a vocabulary.
And what would that be? Would that be the logical connectors and quantifiers?
No, it's still the all the allowed non-logical symbols.
Right. And so it's infinite set of possible non-logical symbols, yeah?
It is, yes.
Okay. And then we should have a note that we don't mean this infinite set of logical, non-logical symbols.
Right, but I wonder when we go to register languages, is this a useful concept to talk about this vocabulary of a language? Or signature of a language.
Yeah, somehow yes. Yeah, but it's different from the signature in this sense here. So we probably need two different notions, or should we overload signature? Yeah, maybe we can also overload signature, because basically it's also a signature, it's just an infinite one. And so we could say the signature is always a set of non-logical symbols, and we have the signature of an expression that's a set of symbols occurring in that expression, and signature of a language is a set of symbols that are possible in that language. Maybe I that's enough.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
Okay. So then Tara writes, in models, certain phrases, model of an OMS, are left to be defined in the node. This model of a signature assumed to be the primary usage. Sorry, I'm not sure whether I understand this. Sarah, could you explain?
Can you repeat back what I said? I don't have this list of questions in front of me.
So you write, in model, so probably you name the term definition, the definition of the term model.
Yes.
Certain phrases, in brackets, model of an OMS, are left to be defined in the node. If, in quote, model of a signature, assumed to be the primary usage.
Okay, so there's this overloading of model, and so there is the notion of a model of a signature and the model of an OMS. Now that perhaps goes back to overloading of signature, because originally you had a signature that was linked to the OMS, so I guess they were kind of the same thing. whether you had a model of the signature or a model of the OMS. But if you overload signature, where it can also be a signature of a language, then you could have a model of the language.
Yeah, sure, that would be a very large model, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I understand. So the note says a model of an OMS is a model of a signature of the OMS that moreover satisfies all the axioms of the OMS. So you have this model of in two different senses. Model of the signature would be some structure that is according to the signature, and then you have model of the OMS or of the logical theory. That's basically also something according to the signature, but also satisfying the axioms. And now this model of is overloaded.
Right.
Doesn't the note just say this, or what should we add there?
Well, I guess because one of the overloaded definitions appears in a note, it sort of suggests that one usage is considered kind of the default usage. So I did not scan through the document to see if there were any points of ambiguity where you would have to look at a reference to a model and try to figure out which kind of model was being used there.
I'm quite sure that there is no ambiguity arising from this.
Okay. But in general usage, because there is overloading, wherever a model is referred to, it needs to be specified, I guess.
Okay, but then we can leave it as it is? Is that okay?
Yeah, I think that's fine. Yeah, it was more a question of your intent rather than the language.
Okay. Then the next comment is from Maria in section 4.2, at the very end of this section, linked data.
Yeah, that was just quite a suggestion to put in better references than the 26 statistics that are there now. At least one is the one from the W3C, and the other one is kind of the standard reference for linked data, the one for the linked data disorder so far.
Let me see. This is Christoph. I think, that's reference 26. Isn't this design issues linked data thing, isn't that actually the standard reference of linked data? Well, maybe this link you gave, is that a redirection to the same? I would have to type it into the browser to see what it is. So that's one thing. I will quickly check this now. And the other thing is, I do agree that it's not nice to cite Wikipedia, but the problem is, the problem that I had with the original W3C definition of linked data, I took it from reference 26, is that it is too W3C biased. So it says somewhere, I think it speaks of URIs instead of IRIs, and it says provide RDF instead of provide machine processable stuff and so on. I found it too specific for us, and I found that, Wikipedia explained things in a more general sense. So that's why I reused some phrases from Wikipedia, and that's why I thought I should also give credit to Wikipedia here. But before I discuss further, I will look into this other W3 link you suggested.
I thought they would be better than, as you say, I don't really like referencing Wikipedia as a random web page. It's not an important thing, it's just a suggestion.
Well, then we can have all of them. Then we have Wikipedia and W3C and the paper co-authored by Berners Lee. I think we can have all three.
Well, but that paper has cited a bit, and it's something like over 2,000 times already.
I wonder whether this paper is necessary. I justified the link to Wikipedia by saying that I have reused some phrases literally from Wikipedia, but I think that this reference 26 is good enough because it is, okay, it's not a journal article, but it states the facts more nicely than the journal article. It is written by Tim Berners-Lee, and in a way, I looked into this other W3C link that you provided, and that's a high-level summary, but it doesn't list these four criteria explicitly, yeah. But instead it refers to this other note, which I cited as 26. So that's why I found
okay.
it
okay, fair enough, then the design issues. But the journal article, I think, gives a quite nice overview. But like mm-hmm. I say, not very important, but it's a reference that I would have expected here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think in parallel, I'll have a look. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And someone... Yeah, I looked into it. I have a preprint of this paper, so I won't give page numbers, but in section 2 of this paper, I see these four criteria also being stated. But again, they are not in the way... I would like to have them. So they are like, where are we in the, I'm working on two different machines. They are in the Tim Berners-Lee style, not in the Wikipedia style. I acknowledge the paper. This paper provides a lot of further useful information. So I think the question is whether in an ONG standard we would like to give useful pointers to further information. And I do acknowledge that this journal article is then the prime reference for this, or whether we would like to keep it focused to technical specifications. For technical specifications, this reference 26, I think, is exactly what we need. Do we also want to provide further, hints for further reading?
So I think if 26 is a good thing to cite, but that's Wikipedia and therefore a bit doubtful to use as the only reference, then I would prefer to have the other two references as well that Maria provided.
Then we'd have four references.
Why not?
Oh, okay. Let me look once more into Maria's W3C.
Well, we can skip that one, but at least I would say this is journal.
Well, I mean, it's also nice and helpful, but then I think it can be substituted by this reference 26, which is the technical specification, and the journal, which provides like human readable background information, but in even more detail than the standard semantic web data link. So I'm fine with 26, Wikipedia, and the journal article.
Okay.
So we omit this W3C stuff, yeah, that then out.
Yeah.
But the journal article. Good. Then on page 11, so in section 4.3, there's footnote or at note 17. And the question whether
Bill, is somebody typing this into the chat, or are you taking notes somewhere, or am I supposed
to? I type it directly in the documents.
That's great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
At note 17, this term is used of element OMS,
element OMS? It means elements, right. Element in the context of OMS, that's some ISO macro that's not supported here. So the term element in the context of speaking of OMS. Right.
Oh, you mean an OMS element?
Well,
I wasn't sure what you meant with even with element ontology.
Yeah, let me see. I will first study the definition, any resource in an OMS, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And in OWL, the term is element ontology, really.
So the story is, in the ISO document, we had element ontology, which
really?
Is some term borrowed from OWL 2. And I now have translated this into element OMS, because ontology has been substituted by OMS. But I have not found this notion in the entire document, so I would suggest to delete it.
Okay.
Unless somebody has some important reason to keep it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm getting the point. So are you sure that element doesn't occur any longer in the
element does occur, but then we should perhaps just delete the OMS.
Ah, I see.
Now I understand the point. It's a subject field command that means
yes.
There are other standards using the same term, namely element, and ISO required us to differentiate that.
Yes.
But I'm not sure whether
in our case, like, maybe suppose we mention XML anywhere. In the context of XML, element also has a well-defined meaning, and it is certainly a different one from ours. Ah, I see. Okay, now I see where we are using the term element in this sense, which we are discussing here. I'm now doing a search on the old ISO working draft. We have a definition of the term annotation. Right, it's just on this page, a bit further below it, on this page. And there we speak of an annotation is information that's attached to an element of an OMS. So this was just to simplify that an annotation can be attached to a symbol, to an axiom, to a module, to a whatever construct the ontology, the OMS language supports. I think that's why I originally introduced the term element.
Okay, but then I suggest that we omit the OMS there and just say element.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have a problem with elements, but element OMS sound is odd, or say an OSM element is fine as well, but. Yeah, I didn't know what it meant with element or ontology. Mm. Because then element becomes an adjective to ontology. It's like, But if you're talking about an element or an ontology, fine.
I see that term.
Could we just have element and then in brackets of an OMS? Would this be okay?
Yes, why not? If OMG doesn't impose any formal restrictions on us, let's use the new liberty. And indeed, I see in some other places in the standard this notion of element does occur, like annotation of an element or identifier of an element. So it makes sense to introduce this general term element, which subsumes a lot of things that can occur in OMSs.
Okay, good. Then let's move to page 12. There Maria has some yellow marked words, but I don't see any annotations, so...
Yeah, well, you hover over this. It's just for disambiguation that instead of the OMS, then you can say that OMS or the OMS that is annotated.
That's good.
A bit more sense, make it clear.
And then sub-OMS... there you say R subsets.
There I got completely confused with this whole sub OMS. One thing is just the English. If you want to keep subsets, so when there is a subset instead of R subset, because we have an individual OMS whose sets of non sentences. I see that now. Like I said, I got completely confused with the whole sub-OMS. The fact that it is subsets. Okay, maybe my English reading was wrong then, but the thing with the definition, why are they only subsets? And then later on I got confused when I came across module as well. I don't know how I have to use or should use this sub ohms compared to module compared to something else.
Yeah, a module is a specific sub ohm. Namely, if you look at the definition of module, it's a sub ohm that conservatively extends to the whole ohms. So it's
that a module is a sub ohm. So,
yeah.
But then it cannot be because it's only subsets. For instance, I have that in the description there where I got like things are jumbled up. For instance, if I have an our light module on A, lowercase a, okay, one thing is with respect to a syntactic approach, whereas the sub-ohms is only looking at a syntactic approach of a subset of those present in a larger module. But you can have a module where, for instance, an ontology is represented in not an AL2DL, but in AL-DL. And instead of your it has four part wheel, you can only say exist half part wheel or exactly four half part thing. In essence, semantically with the meaning, you still could say, well, look, that is a module because you represent it in a language of lower expressiveness. But that would not fit with either the sub-ohms or a module that is a sub-ohms. Whereas also with a module, you're talking about a semantic module, whereas a sub-ohms talks only about a syntactic module. So like I say, I got completely confused with whatever is there on the sub-ohms and the modules. And trying
so
to explain that there I got jumbled up and totally not in the description in the notes, but yeah. If I make a module for my Dolce Light and I slim it down to an L2EL version of Dolce Light, what is my L2EL version of Dolce Light? Is that a sub ohm? Or is that a module or is it something else?
Is it something else?
And what then is that?
Yeah, it's an. It's a kind of approximation. There is a question whether we want to have that in my slides that I presented some weeks ago. I have that in. It's called, technically speaking, it's a uniform interpolation. And the construct that we had... let me think how we call this. I just have to look up, sorry.
That's all right.
We have called this forget, so forgetting, yeah. And that's also
yeah,
the
but it's
technical
the
term used in, the literature for uniform interpolation. It's called forgetting, yeah.
Yeah, but that is what you're doing, but what is the result thingy?
Is the uniform interpolant, I would say. I'm not sure whether there's a more non-technical notion, but definitely it's not called a module or a sub-ontology in those cases. I have never seen this in the literature.
We have that like that in Romanus, by the way, and we call this everything a module. It will be a little bit scruffy, I'll admit that. But then I would want something like that, I can imagine, would exist in this framework from onto IOP as well. So we would have to have a name for those thingies.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. But I would name it differently because in the literature, module is really sub-ohms that it conservatively extends to the whole ohms. Although I recently learned that sometimes this conservatively extends is not necessary and there can be weaker notions of modules. But anyway, what you had in mind that you approximate something in some other language or signature that's called technically a uniform interpolant, and maybe a bit more handy would be to call it an approximant, because you really approximate something in a in a weaker language. I'm not sure. but you change the either the signature or the logic or both, and therefore it's not a sub-OMS in this normal sense, I would say.
Yeah, I figured out that it was not a sub-OMS, but then I was wondering, well, what then is it?
Mm-hmm.
And we have a similar case with my GFO and the GFO basic. They would say GFO basic is a module of GFO, but what in some cases what they do with the GFO basic is that for a whole set of subclasses, they just put in one new superclass, or they drop it as joiners. They still would call it a module.
Yeah, okay. I have added a note that we introduce approximant or uniform interpolant.
Okay.
Okay, then we can leave sub-OMS as it is. Yeah, Maria? Can we leave this description of sub-OMS as it is now?
Yeah, I was looking at, again, at what then I wrote for the given larger. Two different scenarios that I was wondering about. That may need to be refined then as well. If this you have a specific subset of those present in a given larger OMS. And then I was wondering if the given larger OMS was a specific basic OMS or any arbitrary OMS.
I think it's a basic OMS. But, yeah, it could also be an arbitrary OMS which is flattened somehow. Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe we can also leave this open here. And see at the semantics what comes there. So I would rather prefer to be a bit vague here, because we're in the terminology section where we don't have the need to define everything precisely as we do in the semantics. We can be a bit vague here. And then maybe we have a notion of sub-OMS also for structured OMS or only for basic OMS, and we just see what happens to be convenient. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, then in module you have a note, but that's basically the same, yeah?
There was one thing. Yeah, okay, the first part of my comment on the module was indeed the continuation of the rambling about the sub-OMS. The other thing is just purely syntactic. When you have module, you say sub-OMS that conservatively extends to the whole OMS. I would say you have to put your two in italics as well, because that is part of the conservatively extends to, because without the two, it means completely something else. Means the opposite. So the two is essentially part of the predicate.
Agreed, yeah. Okay, then on page 14, at the top, there is an example for module extraction. Okay, and you have better references there.
Yeah,
I think we can have better references there, yeah.
Just pick one, it doesn't really matter. Either one is fine.
Okay. Then on page 14 at the bottom, logical OMS mapping. That you have marked OMS mapping in yellow. What does this mean?
Yeah, when you hover over it, it should pop up with the command mode. At least beforehand it didn't do that, and then I got, like Christoph told me, you can right click on the highlight and then put a comment in there. Basically, because italics has a definition somewhere, whereas OMS mapping didn't. So when I saw it in italics, I was wondering maybe there's also a general OMS mapping. And if not, then maybe it shouldn't be in italics.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, that's true. Okay, then on page 15, you have a comment for virtual import. So the all import is de facto on the virtual import.
Yeah. I was just, I was wondering if you just, if there was a difference between an import and a virtual import. That you're talking about a real import would really be to put the axioms in the same file, essentially, and the whole vocabulary, basically. Or, I mean, that was just wondering.
Christoph, do you know why we have virtual import here and not import? I remember that we have discussed this, but I don't know the reason why we have import, not just import here.
Mm-hmm. Virtual import. Wait. Once more, I'm doing a quick search to over the ISO document. Well, wait, where are we? Okay. Well, there are some imports. Was it that? Was it that we said that import is the process? Because the definition is in a way a bit circular. Virtual import is defined by using the verb importing one ontology into another ontology. Strange.
Yeah,
I think
so
it was some terminology conflict that imports again had a different meaning that we wanted to rule out here.
Yeah, but then I would rename this into import.
Mm-hmm. I think originally it was import.
Yeah.
And at some point in the ISO process, we decided to change it to a virtual import. Or is it, we say an import without the virtual is one type of logical link. Whereas I think this, what we have here in this virtual import section is the way how such a type of link is to be interpreted.
Yeah, but we don't have this notion of import. I would just delete the virtual.
Okay.
And then say logical mapping between two OMS such that one OMS as if it were included into the other, then we avoid this singularity.
Ah, okay, yes. Mm-hmm. By the way, I need to leave in... 5 minutes or so. I'm not sure whether there was any specific in Maria's further comments. I don't see any questions. I think where that specifically addressed me. I mean, there are, Maria, you made some easy comments about serialization. I agree with them. Other than that, the comments are not specifically within my field of expertise, and Tara's comments, I think, are not in my field of expertise either, so I think I shall simply leave in a few minutes. Sorry about that.
Okay. Yeah, then let's go to renaming. Why is this a mapping? If you assign new names, then the old one is erased. But we keep the old one, and then we have a mapping between... say, the old OMS and the new OMS. And that's then the renaming.
Yeah, but it's fine if you keep the old one, and the old one is then deprecated, as what you normally use, say, like an OBO ontology, etc. But then the new name is actually a new thingy, which is not renamed. It's doing something else. So there's a difference between renaming, you have an actual thing, keep the same thing, you give it a different name, or you have an old thing and you create something new and give that a different name.
You have an old thing and give it a new name. Otherwise, everything is kept. That's what's happening here.
So then it's, you're saying you have?
You have an ontology, say, or an OMS, and you... rename some symbol, say person to human being, so the whole ontology now it's about human being instead of person, but otherwise everything remains.
Yeah, but why? Yeah, exactly. But then why do you call it a mapping? Because the mapping is between two things. But if you rename it and the other one doesn't exist, the human, so like the person that you rename into human being, then if you rename it, person doesn't exist anymore. So you cannot have a mapping to something
the
that
original
is,
ontology
is not there anymore.
In the original ontology, it does exist, and then you have a mapping between the old and the new one.
Yeah, but then you still don't have a renaming. You have a deprecated term in an old ontology, in a different ontology, compared to the term in a new ontology.
Okay, why not say assignment of new names?
In a lot of cases, they may not even want to maintain it.
Yeah, so I would change it in assignment of new names to some non-logical symbols of an OMS. Would that
be
better?
Yeah.
And then I have a note saying that this results into a mapping between the old and the new OMS.
If you're willing to maintain those things, I mean, like I do a lot of renaming and I don't bother to give the ontology a new name.
Oh. Yeah, but that's okay. If you in a text editor do some replace, yeah, then yes. But if you use a DOL operation called renaming, then do keep the old one.
Sorry, I got a...
Okay, so then let's move on. Union, you have there are identified. I cannot read the text. Sorry, could you say what's there?
I was just saying this is a bit vague. Does this mean they have to exist for them to make a union?
That's basically they share interpretations. One could say.
So basically, both of them have to have some non-logical symbols that are the same that are involved in each union.
No,
I read it to be that there is no renaming. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. We could also leave out the identified if this confusing.
Right, that was my comment, was that I thought that the use of the word identified is not a good idea.
Yeah, then I just write without any renaming. Okay. Tara, you write similar concern of combination.
Right, so again, the problem is the use of the word identified, but if you say with renaming.
No, there is actually in the combination you have some identification. I change it, but I would change it into aggregation of several OMS along OMS mappings to a new OMS where some of the non-logical symbols of the involved OMS are identified. So you have one ontology with first one with human being. You have an alignment matching person to human being, and then you do the combination. Then you get a resulting ontology where you only have one term for person and human being. And so these two terms are somehow identified.
Well, yeah, I understand the concept. It's the language, the use of the term identified here. Because identified is used in a different sense when you define a resource. And so I think just like you got rid of identified in union, you can get rid of that word in combination.
Are made equal. Is this better?
You have a renaming. There is a non-trivial going on in that aggregation. Isn't that the key point?
They are renamed into the same symbol.
Yeah.
That's better?
Yes.
Okay. Maria also has some combination. How exactly is that different from importing an ontology and linking one's own? The difference is that you have can rename things into the same symbol. Of course, you can. Yeah, you can also, if you don't want to use combination, you can use union and renaming instead. That's always possible. But the interesting thing is here that you can more easily write this down using, for example, alignments. I think I put an example here in the combination definition, and then it's clearer.
Okay. As to me, at least the definition, the description of the definition didn't make it clear what the difference was.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, with the example, hopefully it's clear. I would put it in.
Okay,
then we have matching. There you propose some literature. We can put this in. That's not a problem. I also have a book.
Yeah, it's not just the literature, but you have a bunch of definitions that I can send a book chapter, but that are quite widely used.
Yeah, but there's a new edition, 2013, so I would use the new.
Okay, fine. I didn't know that was a new edition.
Okay, so then we have 4.6. Tara says profile, sublanguage of an OMS language that targets specific applications or reasoning methods. And then Tara comments, I'm not sure this definition is compatible with the example of OWL. Is OWL a single OMS language? There is a different semantics for OWL to full and the other profiles, I believe. Yeah, it's a good point. Normally I would say these are sub-languages, but that's not true for OWL full, because OWL full has a completely different semantics. I'm not sure what to do here.
Well, I think there's a useful sort of more general concept above an OMS language, which might be called something like an OMS framework, where you can have multiple semantics. But still, when you talk about sub-languages, I'm pretty sure you want to narrow your concern down to one language at a time. But profile is perhaps more general. A language within an OMS framework.
Yeah, okay, but then we would need to introduce framework. We already have the distinction between language and logic. And a language can have several logics. I would prefer that we keep that. Then the language would be OWL. OWL2, say, and it have different logics like OWL2DL and OWL2Full. And then these different logics would have different semantics. And then I would add to profile, it could be a sub-language, it could also be a change of the logic or these different profiles could also have different logics. And here we speak about the language only, so we can say it's a sub-language, but not necessarily all the sub-language have the same logic or same semantics.
So it's syntactically a sub-language, and
yeah.
That it's a subset of all the expressions.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, I can also add syntactic there.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of a problem when you have multiple semantics. I mean,
Yeah, but we already care about that because we can have different logics.
Yeah, there's different ways you can have logics. You can have sublogics, or you can go to a completely different semantics. And so I'm okay with the idea of saying, okay, we'll take a general concept of language that you can have multiple semantics, but then it seems like at some point you need a term that says, okay, we have just one semantics that we're talking about at this point.
Yeah, that's the term logic. The logic determines a specific semantics, but there are other languages that have several semantics, like RuleML, that you have one language with several semantics, and you know, so you have several logics. And we even have this kind of support relation between logics and languages and so on, so there's already a lot of machinery covering that.
So what do you get when you take a language and you pair it up with a particular logic? And you say, okay, I'm taking the expressions in this language and interpreting them according to this particular logic. Does that
you cannot do this for an arbitrary logic. You can only take those logics that are supported by this language.
Okay. I'm fine with that. And so pick one of those. Does that become a profile? Or do we have another?
Yeah, that's kind of a profile of the language. That's true, yeah.
So perhaps the definition of profile is more than just a sublanguage. It's a sublanguage of an OMS language interpreted according to a particular one of the logics it supports, something like that.
Okay, so then 4.7, serializations. Maria has some comments there, which I cannot read, unfortunately.
Yeah, but Christopher already said that he already got it, that and he would work on it.
Okay, then I just introduce a note for Christopher.
One is just slash, and the other one is that it stands for the plus any serialization, yada, yada. Actually, the RDF XML serialization is the required one, and the other ones are optional, whereas here it suggests exactly the other way around, so that would have to be reworded. So that's
okay.
That'll be taken care of.
Okay, then in 4.8, we have heterogeneous OMS. The definition is OMS whose parts are supported by different logics, and Tara says, at a first glance, this seems to contradict the definition of OMS, which is a set of expression in a given OMS language. However, in looking at NXC, I see the graph where various profiles of all are supported by different logics. Okay, so
I think now that you have explained this to me, I don't have any problem with the definition. It's just making the jump to understand that. Perhaps an example.
An example would be good, but we should also rephrase OMS. It's not necessarily in a given, in one or more given languages.
Oh, then you have to redefine OMS.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I just would do this. I would say it's a set of expressions in a given OMS language or several such languages.
Mm.
In brackets, the last part. And in heterogeneous OMS, you would prefer to have an example, yeah?
Yes, please.
Okay.
So still about sublogic.
Uh-huh.
So do you really, you know, syntactic restriction of logic, is only syntactic restriction enough?
Yeah, I would say so. Otherwise, it's a different logic.
So sometimes, you know, a logic, does, you know, you can't have an arbitrary restriction on the syntax and then get the logic, could you? That's my, yeah. you have to have syntax restriction, but not an arbitrary restriction on syntax, not necessarily lead to logic.
So a logic that is a syntactic restriction of another logic.
Okay.
Generally, I understand logic is not only syntactic issues. Only a syntax has to have, you know, full semantics and some logical sense of actions and inference rules, things like that. You have to form a whole.
Yeah, sure. So maybe I add inheriting the semantics.
Oh yeah, no, and the you know.
And then so it's a syntactic restriction inheriting semantics. Then it's clear, I think. Okay, then we have on page 18 interoperability.
I think they are all notes. In general, I think it would be good to have some definitions there about it. But I actually, there was just a half-baked comment when I'm looking at it now. If you want to include it, then you may want to refine it. That was actually more the idea.
I remember vaguely that at some point Michael agreed to write some definition of interoperability. Is this still true?
I think he left already.
Ah, he left already. Ah, okay, yeah. Yeah, then let's perhaps leave this for next time. It's already quite late. And then we can stop now. Because, we are also at the end of both Tara's and Maria's comments, unless someone else has some comments.
There was one comment that got missed in the very beginning of my email, which is more of about English, that usually definitions start with an article, A or the, and you've left all those out in these definitions, and as an English speaker, it comes across as odd to me.
Actually, this was required by ISO, and I kind of like this requirement. The requirement was different. The requirement was that you, in your definitions of the terms, you always write some English sentence that could replace the term in all contexts. So if you say OMS and then you say set of expressions, you can say, okay, I have just written an OMS. Then you can replace, I just have written a set of expressions. So then the article is already there in the surrounding context. And you just can substitute OMS with set of expressions. And the article remains there from the context. That's the idea of how ISO sees it, and I tend to keep that.
There's just one problem with that, is that in some places how the definition is phrased, you would logically have the instead of a there. And in my email I gave an example, OMS would be a set of expressions, but signature would be the set of all non-logical symbols of an OMS. And it's a question of uniqueness.
Oh, that's a good point, but I still don't get it with signature.
Well, an OMS has exactly one signature.
Yeah, but the signature, the definition is set of all non-logical symbols of an OMS, and then it's clear that this is unique. So you could also say a set of all non-logical symbols. It would make no difference. There's only one such set.
Yeah, it would be awkward to say a set of all non-logical symbols.
Yeah.
So it may be a matter of rephrasing it as a set including all non-logical symbols of a particular OMS, something like that, if you really want to go with that replaceability.
Mm. So my question would be, is there some term where this or the is really needed and both have different semantics? I mean, in the case of signature, it's just a bit awkward. If you should have the there, but you could also have the there. It's the different semantics in both cases. The only difference is the it sounds a bit awkward. I can live with that. But do you have a term where versus the really makes a semantic difference?
I would have to go over it again and think about that, but I can do that.
Oh, thanks.
Theo, in general, if you know there's only one, you use the. If you know there are a few of them, more than one, you being an arbitrary one, so you're you use a.
Yeah, that's clear, but that's not the point here. The point is that ISO requires that we don't use these articles here. Or we don't use articles at all here. And I tend to stay with this ISO requirement, although we are not forced to meet all the ISO requirements because we are at OMG now. Still, we have the goal of eventually becoming also an ISO standard, and then it's easier if we already conform with ISO format.
Provide a note in the case that when you need to say that's the only one.
Oh, yeah, that's also a good point, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would
solve
the problem.
So with signature, we could do that.
All right. But in any case, I will still go over it from an English speaker's perspective.
Yeah, good. Okay. So then I would say we have reached the end of the session. Then I suggest that the next meeting is in exactly 2 weeks. And yeah, we have all summertime then, or there's no problem with summertime, I guess.
Europe takes the time and we go back to the way it was before.
So it will be 5 p.m. Your time?
Yes. Although Terry Longstreth has said that he can only attend 1 hour earlier, but I think that's only for today. That's not a general thing.
Okay. I'll put it on the chat and we'll check.
So for the bridge, you 4 o'clock in the bridge summertime?
Yeah, it's 4 o'clock British time.
Yeah, British will change in
British summertime.
Okay, yeah.
So what I put in the chat is the right thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. And see you next time.
Yep.